Hello, my name is Dr. Kevin Elko, and welcome to my Insider Podcast for September 2007. Today's topic is intrinsic motivation. Let me tell you what intrinsic motivation is not. It's not a reward. It's not a contest that you won. It's not a trophy. It's nothing external. It's something that's deep inside of you, some desire. Something you feel like you really would like to accomplish, some place or something you would like to make different in the world. And I'm going to start off talking about why. Why intrinsic motivation? And here's my answer to that. Happy is a state of mind in which one recognizes their own personal power and recognizes their place in the world. And once those two things are accomplished, one finds genuine happy. And let's start off talking about one's personal power. In Panther Creek, Tennessee, there's a story told about a family in Ladies Home Journal. And it's the story of a mother who was pregnant. And every single evening, she would put her three-year-old son to sleep. And she would read him some stories. And then together, the both of them would look at her stomach and sing to this unborn baby girl. They both would sing one song every night before the little boy went to bed. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. I'm going to spare you my singing. You make me happy when skies are gray. Well, finally, this little girl was born in the hospital in Morristown, Tennessee. But the baby had what is called a failure to thrive syndrome. Just could not live life on her own, without the help of machines, without assistance. Her heart could not sustain any kind of regular beat. Her vitals could not come to a level to sustain life. So they rushed the baby to St. Mary's Hospital in Knoxville and put the baby in intensive care. Every day the mother and the father would go visit this little baby girl who was hooked to machines and could not keep her own life going. After 9 days, the family was told by the doctors, "You need to go home and get your affairs in order. This baby is not going to make it." So they went home that night, and as they came through the door, their son was waiting for them and asked, "When am I going to get to see my sister? I've been waiting to sing to her for months. When will that occur?" The mother thought, "Well, no young children are allowed in the intensive care unit. But if we don't do it now, he's never going to sing." So she looked at her little son and said, "You're going to sing right now. Get in the car." She drove this boy up to Knoxville. And she was walking in the intensive care, and a nurse saw her and said, "No children are allowed in the intensive care." She said, "Then you're going to have to call security because my son's going in. He's going in to sing to his sister." They walked in. The nurse trailed them. And as the little boy walked in, he saw his sister hooked up to tubes and machines. He took his right hand. He placed it over hers. And he started to sing. It's what he wanted to do. "You are my sunshine, my only sunshine." Heart rate got regular. Started to change. Started to get stronger. Started being a rhythm. Now the mother said, "Sing. Keep singing. You make me happy when skies are gray." Now the vitals change. Now the nurse is screaming, "Sing, boy, sing." And he kept singing, and he kept singing, and he kept singing. And 10 days later, that little girl was released from the hospital in Knoxville. And a few months later, she was baptized in the Panther Creek Methodist Church in Tennessee. Small children seem to know it, We adults seem to forget it. But there's something powerful in us. When we touch another's life, when we say something kind, when we serve in a way that we were always meant to serve. I watched a movie on the plane the other day in my little DVD player, and I didn't know what to think once it started, but I fell in love with the movie. It was called The Five People You Meet in Heaven, and it was about a young man. It started out being about a young man, but it was really about you and I. And this young man, his father was the head of maintenance at an amusement park. And this boy said, when I grow up to be an adult, I'm going to be an engineer, but I will never work here. I'm getting out of here. I'm not going to work in this amusement park. He went to work there as a young man, but it was part-time, until he got up enough money to go to school to be an engineer. But he got drafted to go to the war, World War II, and while he was there, he was taken captive. One day, him and a bunch of soldiers broke out of where he was taken captive. And as they were going, he took a flamethrower and started to burn down the huts. And he thought he saw a figure. He wasn't sure. And he started to go back in the huts, but he was shot from behind. And they took him away to hospitals, eventually back home to America. Well, his father, who was the director of maintenance at the amusement park, passed away. And this young man went to work in his spot for what he thought would be a short period of time just to support the family. But he ended up living his whole life working in that amusement park. And he just felt like his life was a complete trap. Until one day, a ride broke and he went to save a little girl to push her out of the way from a piece of the ride that was falling, and it hit him. And he died. And the only thing on his mind when he was in heaven was, did I save the little girl? He met a soldier friend of his. He had some forgiving to do, and being forgiven, he met his father. Did I save that little girl? I felt her hand. It's always said the whole movie. Did I save that little girl? I felt her hand. So finally he met the fifth person he was to meet. It was a young girl, 5 years old. She said, I'm the fifth person. He said to her, how'd you get here? He said, I was that little girl in the hut. The person you thought you saw was me. You started a fire, and you burned me. He fell to his knees, and he asked for forgiveness. He washed away all of her scars. Then he said, that little girl, I felt a little girl's hand pulling me. He said, the girl said, no, you pushed her. She didn't pull you. That hand pulling you was my hand, the girl he burnt. And I was pulling you to heaven. And she said, your life was perfect. Your life was supposed to be keeping children safe. That was your mission. That was the orders that you had unsealed when you came here. And this movie wasn't biblical, but it was really neat at the end. See, in this movie you get to choose your heaven. And that man chose that amusement park as his heaven. It comes down to if we really realize our impact, we probably have a lot more peace than we do. If we realized our personal power. And he eventually chose a life. He eventually chose eternity, which is exactly what he lived here. And there's a phrase that says, before enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. That's our place in the world. We all have one. We're meant to have one. We have to find it. And usually it's doing just what you're doing right now, but just doing it with different hands and different eyes, serving. Now, recognizing our own personal power and recognizing our place in the world. If you've read my book, I have a future book coming out as well. If you've ever heard me speak, if you've listened to any of my, if you listen to my DVD, or CD, excuse me, this concept is front and center. This is the story that people mostly recite back to me. I got this from working in the National Hockey League. USA Hockey was picked to win the gold medal in the Olympics in Japan, the Winter Olympics. However, they didn't. In fact, I don't think they won a game. The Czech Republic won it. The captain of the Czech Republic team was a man that still plays hockey, but every game he ever played, he has worn the number 68. His name's Jaromír Jágr. Plays in the National Hockey League, plays for the Penguins, plays for the Rangers, plays the Olympics. That's his number. Because 1968 was the year of the Russian occupation of Czechoslovakia. That's his number. Well, USA was supposed to win the gold medal, but the Czech Republic won it. They beat Canada in the gold medal game, but the game before Russia. The referee walked in before that game and said, "Ice time." This guy stood up. He said, "I waited all my life for today. I dedicate this to my grandfather and anyone who lost their life during the occupation. I have always dreamed that this hockey game would unify our country and we could celebrate and dance over this victory together." It was over. Do you have one of those? That's intrinsic motivation. No outside reward. It's just something inside of you who's dying to get out. I was lucky enough to work for LSU when they won the national championship. Their head coach's name was Nick Saban. He's now at the University of Alabama. The whole season, this concept was front and center. What's your 68? And theirs was, at the end of the season, the whole country would look upon a team and go, "There's a great football team." They wanted them to be talking about them. They played Georgia and beat them by 4 points during the course of the year. But now they're playing Georgia for a second time in the SEC championship game. And if they win this game, they win the SEC and they get to play Oklahoma for the national championship. Beat them by 4 points. And it's a tough thing beating somebody twice. So the night before the game in Atlanta, the head coach gave everybody on the team a white football with a number stamped on the side, 68. He asked everybody in the room to pick the black pen up that he put at their seat. And he asked them a question. He looked at the guy up front first. So if you could dedicate this game to Georgia, the game tomorrow to anybody, who'd you dedicate it to? This guy said, "My grandmother. Everything good in me, my grandmother put in me." He said, "Dedicate the game to your grandmother. Write the note on that football I gave you right there with that pen. Put her address on the paper beside you." Went to another ball player and said, "How about you?" He said, "My son." He said, "Write your son a note. Put his address right there." Saban, the head coach, packed up 100 footballs before the game. Already dedicated the victory and had the team watch them go away in a postal truck. Gone. Dedicated. They beat Georgia by four. Four touchdowns. A little more than 4 points. Here comes your question. What would you write on that ball? Think. What would you put on there? That's what this is about. A man walked up to me as a financial advisor. "Here's 68, just to make this plain." Said, "My mother went to work as a machinist. She worked hard. She was a single parent. To put me and my two sisters through college, we all three went to Boston University. My mother put us through. 3 days before I graduated, my single parent mother, she passed from a stroke." His financial advisor says, "I do this pretty well because every single one of my clients looks to me like my mother." That's 68. That's intrinsic motivation. And if you're wondering how in the world you spell love, here it comes. T-I-M-E. If you're wondering what your 68 is, it's easy. Or let's say it this way. If you're wondering what your 68 has been, it's easy. Where do you spend your time? I have a lot of friends tell me, well, I love my family, but they spend a lot of time on the golf course. Oh, they're a whiz on the course. Well, then, I'm not so sure I buy it. T-I-M. What's your 68? T-I-M-E. So you can change it. I'm going to do this different. In the future, this will be my 68. Here's where I will spend my time. I love the book Suzanne's Diary for Nicholas, James Patterson. Here's the gist of that book. Life is juggling five balls: family, friends, health, integrity, career. First four balls, they're crystal. What happens when you drop crystal? Shatters. Breaks. That fifth ball that you're juggling, it's called career. Family, friends, health, integrity, career. That one's rubber. That one bounces. The first four don't. Do not drop the first four balls and let your 68 sit right there. A combination of your health, family, friends, and integrity. Let your 68 come from there. Now, I often get asked this question, what's the best 68? And it really just comes down to one. Go give to others, and it will come back to you. Go serve. That's the best one. The head of the Salvation Army was trying to motivate his troops before Christmas years ago. It was very expensive to send a telegram to everyone. And you got to get these numbers, the names, everything, the words, just very, very few. You have to get them down. He got it down to a sentence, and they said, still, it's too expensive. So he finally sent to everybody one word: others. Go give. Do exactly what you're doing now. Back to that story, the five people you meet in heaven. But do it in the spirit of giving and serving others. Martin Seligman is at the University of Pennsylvania. And he went and studied happy. Not a lot of studying on happy. A lot on how not to be depressed, but not happy. And he came up with this. When somebody is clinically depressed, there's a chemical missing. Serotonin is called the happy transmitter. And they came out with a line of drugs, Prozac, Serazone, and they're whole function is to raise up someone's serotonin level. This chemical is there when you're happy, and when they do autopsies, not there for people who are depressed. Those pills will bring up the serotonin level. Not a real complicated thing. Perform a kind act, receive a kind act. Just go observe a kind act. Your serotonin, the happy neurotransmitter, it rises through the roof. More than any pill. Go give. Keep in mind, this conversation started off talking about happy. My father bought me a Volkswagen. When I was in high school, I think he spent $200 for it, but keep in mind, this was in the mid-70s. I don't think a Volkswagen cost but $1,000. But this car has no gas gauge. You knew you were out of gas when you ran out of gas. You just stopped. But you had two gas tanks, and you threw a switch. When you ran out of gas, you went to your reserve tank. You always found more energy. Well, I run out of gas once in a while. I'm traveling a lot, dealing with airports, plane delays, red eyes. I surely know how to run out of gas. But I'll tell you how I find my reserve tank. I was speaking to a group in Colorado Springs. I've spoken to this group a number of times. And one of the men in the group, a wholesaler, walked up to me and said, "You saved my life." I said, "I saved your life." He said, "Yeah, I mean, you saved my life." "How did I save your life?" He said, "I was diagnosed at Johns Hopkins with something called PANS." I'm thinking, this guy's serious. It's a disease that only men get between the age of 30 and 34. Me and two men were diagnosed the same day. We were all three given 6 months. This was 5 years ago. They're both gone. I'm still alive. You did it. I said, well, what did I do? He said, it was on your CD. I was listening to it after I was diagnosed. And you said, don't quit. I said, was there more? I got a PhD. I mean, I need more than that. No. No, that's all you said. So I decided not to quit. And I'm still here. And I'm still with my wife. And I'm still with my children. I'm still doing my job. And I'm still here. I found my reserve tank. I realized that day my personal power and my place. My place is this, what I'm doing now. I've done many other things. I'm not sure I was very good at them. Go, as Joseph Campbell says, follow your bliss. Find your personal power. Find your place in the world. And when I was a child, I was pretty rambunctious. So I would hear this often from people in authority. What in the name of God are you doing? Well, go answer the question.